go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we go. A minute past the hour on this, the 30th and final day of the month of June, 2015. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go to jump into the chat room if you've never been there. It's a wonderful time, and you are heartily invited to attend. That's where you'll find this evening Anatole and Jugger Punch and Texas T, all capably moderated by veteran chat room moderator Sparky. Yeah, good evening, everybody. Just pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you will be part of the conversation. I invite you to participate, we all do, in the real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn Chat Room. Also, oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And yes, it is, like I said, Tuesday, the 30th day of June, 2015. Titanic Tuesday, to be precise. Also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you will find the Contribute tab. The Contribute tab is how we keep this effort going. And we are in what is, for lack of a better term, a challenging week here at the Horn. Ah, thank you very kindly, Jeremy, in Vermont, loud and clear on TuneIn. Good to know we are getting through. So, like I said, a challenging week at the Horn. What that means? Well, it's challenging insofar as we're trying to raise 2 weeks' worth of funds in one little week. That means we're trying to raise $2,000. Okay, and that being the case, then how does that work? Well, we got off to a rousing good start. Yesterday we had $300 in challenges on the table that were matched by a number of people. Thank you very, very kindly to everyone who did. And then subsequent to that, $60 in challenges were met as part of Jug of Punches, Our Cup Runneth Over challenge. And that means that, well, we're here. We're today. This here Titanic Tuesday, and my word, how Titanic it is going to be. Oh! Well, we have a challenge on the table this evening from Chris in Germany. Chris is putting up a $100 challenge. And that means the first $100 that come in will be, in fact, doubled. Your 10 becomes 20, your 20, 40, your 40, 60, your 50, 100, your 100 becomes 2, up to the first $100 to come in. If we meet Chris's challenge this Titanic Tuesday, then the remainder of the Our Cup Runneth Over challenge, courtesy of Jug of Punch, our buddy Thomas, will kick in. And the next $140 will be matched, dollar for dollar. It's really quite amazing. Thanks very kindly to Barbie and to Chris and to Jug of Punch. And, of course, to Shirley for what will be tomorrow, the monthly Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. It's on the first day of the month. We have a chance. The challenges amount to $1,000. If some variety of the Horn Commune Family Congregation contributes the other 1,000 bucks, 10 folks at 100 or 100 folks at 10, it matters not, or one person at 1,000 for that matter, then we will have met the fundraising needs for 2 weeks, because all of this is because I'm not going to be here next week. I'm going to be near Washington, D.C., not in it, but near it. We'll be commuting about 50 miles every day to go and make a big midsummer push toward getting the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, H.R. 912, introduced into the Senate of the United States. It's time for the people, the members of the Senate who consider themselves to be progressive, or even the members of the Senate who consider themselves to be sympathetic to the needs of human beings. You'll notice I didn't say people. Corporations are people now too, my friend. But human beings. To be as bold and as brave as the members of the House have been in introducing the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. By the way, if you want to participate and augment our efforts next week, then we're not limiting ourselves to the Senate, but if you want to reach out to your senators, it would be most welcome, and it matters not whether they be Republican or Democrat. But the other thing you can do is reach out to your member of the House of Representatives. For instance, if you're Judy Chu in the past has been a member of the has been on the bill, but because we have not been able to afford to be there to do all the requisite door knocking, well, a few people that were on the bill aren't there now because there's been nobody there to remind them that they need to sign on. Up in Minnesota, Keith Ellison, a very important co-signer of the bill, isn't on the bill because there's been no one there to remind him to sign on. So reach out to your House of Representatives member, reach out to your senators, and in the case of the Senate, tell them you want a companion bill to H.R. 912, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, introduced in the Senate. Because we haven't done it in quite a while, I think a little bit of a review is in order. How does the AIC Act, that's what Appalachian Communities Health Emergency spells, AIC, how does the AIC Act work? Let me tell you. The AIC Act is based upon more than 20 peer-reviewed science journal articles that detail and document the ongoing public health crisis in central Appalachia stemming from mountaintop removal. Everything from birth defects to heart disease to lung disease to a sickening variety of cancers to 4,000 statistical excess deaths per year in West Virginia's mountaintop removal counties. Because of this ongoing public health disaster, the AIC Act sets up a moratorium on new mountaintop removal permits. And that moratorium would remain in place while a fully funded federal study of the toxic effects of mountaintop removal is undertaken. Once that study is completed and a report is generated and sent to the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Resources, then the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Resources must then certify whether or not mountaintop removal can be done safely around human populations. If the answer to that question is no, and we pretty much know that the answer to that question is going to be no, that it cannot be done safely around human populations, then mountaintop removal ends. It's over. It becomes an illegal act. And as such, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act is a historic bill because there has never been another one introduced with the power to provide that sort of relief to the suffering people who daily must breathe the toxic filth that comes off of these sites. So that's just a little primer on how the AIC Act works, in case you want to include that in your correspondence, or in case anyone should ask you, well, you know, what is it? Now, typically, especially if you're writing to a Republican, what you'll get back is an explanation of what the AIC Act is. Let me see if I can find something real quick. My AIC colleague and a co-founder of the AIC campaign with me is, of course, Bo Webb. And not too awfully long back, I hope I can scroll down here far enough to find it. Bo wrote to West Virginia member of the House of Representatives, David McKinley. Now, David McKinley is a friend of Cole. And he wrote encouraging him to support the AIC Act. Because these are the sorts of things you kind of have to do. And Bo was kind enough to publish representing McKinley's response. Thank you for contacting me about mountaintop removal coal mining and the AIC Act. I appreciate your comments. Like hell he does. I hope the earth opens up and swallows you whole. The AIC Act was introduced on February 12th by Representative John Yarmuth. This bill would stop any new mountaintop removal coal mining permits from being issued, as well as any attempts to expand existing sites. This legislation would require comprehensive studies on the health impacts of mountaintop removal coal mining on individuals living in the surrounding communities where this type of mining is conducted. These studies would then be reviewed by the Secretary of Health and Human Service to determine whether mountaintop removal mining does not pose a risk to public health. Under the current administration, the passage of this bill would be a rubber stamp for its ongoing war on coal. And I would not support it. The administration's war on coal, and see, the minute he uses war on coal, you know something very important about David McKinley. Shh, he's a liar. Because there's no such thing as the war on coal. Now, there is a coal industry war on people. Sure, but there's no war on coal. The coal industry is getting a hiding from the natural gas industry, as we all know. The administration's war on coal is already jeopardizing thousands of West Virginian jobs in the coal mining industry. I include this as part of Titanic Tuesday because this is an example of Titanic intellect. And preventing new jobs from entering our state. 60% of business taxes collected in West Virginia are from the coal sector, which also contributes about $4 billion to our gross state product every year. We have a responsibility to take care of our environment and ensure safe conditions for our workers and citizens. We will not live up to that responsibility. Oh, sorry, I added that. At the same time, I remain committed to preserving good West Virginia jobs and creating an environment that fosters economic growth to ensure a more prosperous future for all West Virginians. While we do not agree on this issue, I look forward to finding common ground on other issues in the future. Thank you for taking time to contact my office. Please do not hesitate to contact me in the future with any of your questions, concerns, or opinions, etc., etc. Yep, that's a titanic intellect, all right. No getting around it. But quite often, they will write back and explain to you what it is that you wrote to them about as if you didn't understand. See how that works? Yeah. But I thought it might be beneficial to have a little bit of background in case you do want to help us out as we go to D.C., which, as I was explaining, I'm going to do. And we're having to raise 2 weeks' worth of funds in 1 week because I can't be sure that I'm going to be able to broadcast all or any of those evenings, because most every day we're going to be commuting back from D.C. close to or thereabouts airtime. If, however, it is possible to be on the air, I will. Okay? It's just highly doubtful. Oh, and thank you very kindly to Darlene in Connecticut. Thank you, Darlene, for in one fell swoop matching Chris's challenge for this evening. That means we are halfway to this evening's $400 fundraising goal. Yes, indeed. Which, remember, okay, now that the challenge is met, the Thomas's Our Cup Runneth Over challenge kicks in, and the next $140 that comes in will be matched dollar for dollar. I think we could probably do this. And that would put us only, well, let's see, that would put us over the top by $80 for this evening, which is, in a word, huge. Now, as noted, it is, in fact, Titanic Tuesday on the horn. And a gentle reminder that Titanic Tuesday is named in dubious honor of the things that pass for intellect in the right wing, and we have some disturbing exemplars thereof for the evening, please believe you me. It gets its name from something that our buddy Jim over in Beckley heard many years ago now, back when there was a local right-wing blatherer, a 962nd tier conservative talker on the air at WWNR. He would, in this stentorian monotone, he would lull people to sleep by reading them the newspaper every morning. But once in a while, once in a very great while, he would get a call from some wingnut, one of his little followers, one of whom called one morning and said, "Steve, why, how come you reckon is there seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? For we are not nowhere near the beach." To which, in the great certainty that always attends right-wing intellect, he responded, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." Still no word on the movement of the Titanic creme brulee cups. Mm-mm. So, every Tuesday on the Horn is a celebration of right-wing intellect. Yeah. Right. Well, like I said, we got a lot to work with this evening. A little note coming in. Hold on. Yeah. Little note coming in from our buddy Steve, who ordinarily is in China, but isn't. Steve says, just returned to the USA for a little R&R before going back to China. I like to stay in the Seattle-Tacoma area because the weather is usually so damn pleasant for summer. But we're sweating it out right now in a heat wave that makes me think I should have returned to Florida for a little cooler weather. As for people here, they know what's happening and speak of the California weather moving north. Speaking of sweating it out, I note that the summer distractions have already kicked into high gear, with the gritty reality as entertainment as reality series about the escaped New York convicts and their sorry fates. Yeah, one of them blown away outright, another one shot and critically injured. On the run, Steve says, headed for the Mexican border. Good God, classic Pulp Fiction TV in widescreen high-def glory. You gotta run out for the nachos, cheese dip, and all-beef holiday wieners for this one. Corruption? Heroin? Allegations of evil prison guards in cahoots with their desperate convict charges? Say it ain't so! Who would have thunk that the American penal system, Steve said penal, is the greatest institution on earth for producing just about every sort of corruption or malignancy imaginable, or that any prison environment, by definition, functions to maintain and produce the very criminal class it is supposed to rehabilitate or otherwise make penitent for wrong behavior. Any racket, after all, greases its own wheels, pushes the drug before it sells the product. Amen. Regards, Steve in China and points west. Or, as the case may be, I got to thinking east. That's the neat thing about living on a more or less round planet. And Steve's email reminded me that I haven't said anything about the great big New York prison break. Dum 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 dum. That's our expensive intro music that goes with all segments of where you want to get over on Fox News, where you want to get Granny and Grandpa, you know, Emery and Marveline all worked up. Dum 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 dum. Prison break in New York. Dum 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 dum. And oh, and by the way, and I didn't mention it because unless you were in the area where somebody broke out of prison, and call me crazy here, that ain't news. But speaking of graphics, honest to Pete, have you ever seen anything more idiotic, more mind-numbingly right-wing, paranoia-inducing than that ad that runs with that little neo-maxi-zoom dweeby guy on TV for PC-matic? Now, this is ostensibly some sort of program that will keep your computer free of viruses. And their spokes guy, I don't know, maybe he's like the LifeLock guy, and he's so impressed with himself that he has to be the person in the ads. You've seen this, right? I happened to catch it earlier today when, through the miracle of the interweb tubes, I was watching some television. Well, that's very, very true. America does love its prison porn. And I don't, so that's why it has somehow hasn't made it onto my radar, I guess. But anyway, so this little neo-maxi-zoom dweeby guy in a T-shirt and jeans who stands just a little bit oblique to the camera, while talking about the manifest benefits of using PC-Matic, talks about it while there are myriad images from our recent misadventures in dusty and desertified parts of the world. You know, mud brick houses blown partially to pieces, great big fireballs going up into the sky in the distance. Now, these are still photos. It's not video. It's just he's green screened in front of it. Then there's a picture of two or three aircraft carriers steaming through some waters somewhere with like a lot of little baby ducks behind them, some frigates and destroyers and whatnot. And then there's a map of the globe that shows where your major and he says, and many of the antivirus programs are produced in the same parts of the world that also produces most of the viruses. And they show Kaspersky and Symantec and McAfee, and there's little bullseyes on Japan and India and Russia. But not PC-Matic. It's made in the USA, home to some of the greatest computer programmers in the world. I cannot begin to express the degree of contempt I feel for this little dude. Surely to God you've seen this thing. It's embarrassing in its overt right-wingery. And then, as if to make sure, in case you didn't understand that the target audience for this this piece of software that I would not put on a goddamn Commodore 64 from the 80s. He turns from that oblique angle so that he's facing square to the camera, and son of a gun, he... Well, you guessed it. He's wearing a gun! Because I guess he's going to shoot the viruses. Or maybe them Russian virus people are coming through his door at night and installing the viruses on his computer by hand or something. No kidding. The guy is wearing a damn freedom protector in a commercial about antivirus software. I just happen, because I've seen it a million times, and I go, yeah, what a jerk. But only today did I give it my full attention, because sometimes I do that with commercials, because it's my theory that you can actually learn a lot about a culture by watching its commercials. Because commercials are the ultimate manifestation of what corporations want you to think about the capitalist culture of the individual country in question. And while this particular commercial was running on MSNBC, the first thing that occurred to me is they got to be running this on CNN and Fox too. And that's true, Jeremy in Vermont noting, mind you, Bob, the LifeLock dweeb had his own Social Security number and ID stolen after flaunting it all over New York City on that mobile billboard. And all these PC repair programs are proven dead to rights to be little more than spam and spyware and all crap. You pay them to infect you and then maybe clean you. Hence, I would not let PC-Matic anywhere near a Commodore 64, although Marty points out, well, a TRS-80 maybe. But commercials, far more than TV itself, programming itself, commercials are the true reality shows about America. or at least our vision of ourselves. And so Emery and Marveline there, who are still trying to figure out how to turn on the computer machine. Well, when they finally get it figured out, they're going to put PC-Matic on it, because that's going to put a little dweeb down inside their computer who's got a gun running around looking for Russian Trojans and viruses and hostageware. No shit, they've invented a new word, hostageware. Okay, Marty's seen it. Can't tell you about CNN or Radio Rwanda, but I have seen that commercial on ID, Discovery, and Smithsonian, maybe even BBC America, too. Watch for the pistol next time, Marty. No kidding. Michael in Madison says, wow, I've never seen this. I Googled it, and one of the top three suggested searches was an image search for PC Matic guy eyes. All I can tell you is, I don't know. He's just... And he, you can tell that he's got like that military fetish going on, because you know he's got that sort of that T-shirt that the military issues. That's, it's not brown and it's not tan and it's not green. It just looks dirty even when it's clean. Hey, Marveline? Tell the grandkids to get in the car and get their Sunday best on. We're going to Radio Shack. And then we're going to come home with our new computer, and we're going to put on that PC Matic. As I sat there watching this computer, I was thinking, there's got to be some college professor in some media studies class out there in America who's using this in a marketing class as how not to advertise your product. Yeah, okay. Now, thank you, Irish Dave. Irish Dave says, I expert guess that pack and heat is needed to complete the uniform of the day for the anti-vaxxers and shit. Also, too, ransomware. That's it, not hostageware, ransomware. And yes, I realize this is not political and it's not some sort of earth-shattering news. Let's see. I didn't get a chance right before airtime. It was on my list and I forgot, because I forgot what I did with the list. Maybe the PC Matic guy can help me find it. So did Greece default? This is one of those moments where it would be really handy to have a little conversation with Sandra, because she's always been so good with this stuff. I've been watching the breathless coverage of the Greek financial crisis, and insofar as I'm not an economics guy and I'm not an accounting guy, all I can tell from what I'm reading is that the rest of Europe wants the Greeks to put the screws a little harder to Granny and Grandpa, Oma and Opa, or whatever it is in Greek. No, Opa is what you holler when you're dancing and drinking ouzo, right? Okay. Opa's grandfather in Germany. But to hear the for-profit media report it, the European Central Bank wants Greece to behave more financially responsibly, which of course means more austerity. And austerity right now in Greece is kind of like a great big rock that's sitting on the entire Greek population. But without regard to the ins and outs of it all, one thing I did find interesting. This is Greece, after all. Marty, thank you very kindly. According to BBC News, Greece has missed the payment. But this is Greece. This is the country one of whose city-states about 2,400 years ago or so gave us the idea that the best way to go about governing oneself is to get everybody involved in the life of the life of the community all together and let them decide questions of how to go about running things. This we call democracy. And every time we mention democracy in this country, it usually has to be accompanied by the word "our" in front of it. Our democracy! Our democracy! Our democracy, my friends! Our democracy. And an angelic chorus singing, oh, in the background. I mean, we get the word democracy. Demos is the word for people in Greek. We get the word politics from the ancient Greek. The polis, the P-O-L-I-S, which, of course, they didn't use the Roman alphabet. They used the Greek alphabet. It's more convenient for them being Greek. But the polis, what would that be? Pi, omicron, lambda, iota, sigma. And all the various endings that go with a highly inflected language. But the polis was that community, that ingathering of the people who lived in a particular place that needed to be managed with some degree of equality, as long as one was male and free. Yeah, you women folk there need not apply. But it was Greece, and particularly the Athenians, who promptly let their democracy go right off the rails, by the way. It was Greece and the Athenians who gave us the idea of democracy and of putting questions of community import to the people. And so it is that the Greek prime minister said to the European Central Bank and the European powers, look, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to ask the Greek people how they feel about it, and we're going to have an election on Sunday, and I'll do what they tell me. Now, is this just some sort of cynical political ploy? Or is this, dare I say it, democracy? Because with all the talk that all of these developed nation countries have, and the angelic choruses go, oh, every time democracy gets mentioned, the rest of Europe went, what, you're going to do? Fuck, no, you're not. Pay the money. That's a nice little country you got there. It'd be a shame if something happened to it. No, the Europe's no. Your election, your voice of the people is a silly thing. And I thought that rather a telling little moment. The Germans are worried about the euro. The French are worried about the euro. Because they're the most heavily invested in the euro. They kind of prop the euro up. Great Britain is, of course, the United Kingdom is, of course, still sound as a pound. The Swedes still have the kroner. One can get along without the euro. But the funny thing is, when the eurozone was introduced, and really there's kind of a historic parallel here, it was said to be an irrevocable membership. It was kind of a monetary Hotel California. You can check out any time you like, but you can never leave. And so now the Greeks find themselves in the position of wondering, you know, what's going to happen? Are they going to march down here and repo our, you know, 1985 Chevy Astro van? I mean, what are they going to do? Come here and steal our cultural treasures? Oh, wait! The Elgin Marbles are sitting in a museum in London. That's already happened. I mean, so what else? Maybe they're going to pack the temple to Athena Parthenos full of gunpowder and maybe set it up. No, that happened too. Damn it, and that was our fault. But of course, there's much nervousness in the markets because the holy sacred markets are very much like a shaking like a dog trying to pass a peach pit. All this because, stupid me, I watch a little television. Jack in Shreveport was trying to kind of anticipate what I was going to, the PC-matic dude, subject line, PC-matic dude. I was waiting for you to report something like, programmed by Christians in America. Or maybe PC Medic does not launch itself on Sundays to round out the right wingishness of the ad. I wouldn't be surprised, but of course, but no, it's all military imagery and dusty battle hardened soldiers. I'm sorry, we have to call them warriors now, don't we? Standing behind some ruined wall in Iraq somewhere. It was war porn. And I guess that's the image that's supposed to convey that it's war out there inside your computer. But somehow I think you want a different guy than the little dweeb dude. Now, is this the same... I'm thinking back. Is this the same product that was advertised by... some former member of the Dallas Cowboys who has a really, really, really red face and looks like the doctor needs to check his blood pressure medication? I can't remember. But it will most assuredly be interesting to watch the unfolding events in Greece. Because there is one other little angle there, and that is this. Russia. Now, for those who are not necessarily inclined toward the knowing of old boring stuff like history, it might be noted, or it might be worth taking note, that there is a very, very long cultural tie between Greece and Mother Russia. It was, in fact, Greek Orthodox missionaries who went north up out of the Balkans, attempting to Christianize the barbarian Slavic hordes. And they were mostly successful. Along the way, they were impeded by Roman Catholic missionaries who wanted to do the same thing, and that's how come the Serbs are Orthodox and the Croats are Catholic, and they've been at each other's throats ever since. Tastes great! Less filling! Die! And so, with this happening, one wonders if Vlad Putin might be standing by to say, "What? You see, Western Europeans, not your friends. Russia is your friend. You come with Russia. We give you rubles." Yeah, what do you want to bet they're whistling Russian folk tunes in Athens before too long as the tourist trade picks up. Which, of course, will drive the war hawks in the West absolutely crazy. Because it doesn't take much. When your military minds are all sort of Swiss cheesed with little bloodthirsty spirochete, burrowing kind of itching for war kind of, oh yeah, this is going to work out. Meanwhile, back here at home, it just gets interestinger and interestinger. You might be interested to know that presidential timber, Piyush Jindal, whom no one in Louisiana likes anymore, and are now trying to foist off on us as president of the United States just to get him to leave. Oh, really? You love him? He'll privatize your schools and ruin them and. Bankrupt the country, and no, it'll be great for you. No, here, take him. Really, you want it to go box? Piyush has just signed an executive order in the state of Louisiana, Stan, telling county clerks there. Well, parish clerks, I guess they don't have clerks. They have parishes in Louisiana. That it's okay to ignore the Supreme Court's order in the Obergefell case. That it's okay to tell the Supreme Court of the United States to go up a rope. Oh, and by the way, you remember that clip that we had of Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, on the program last night? The one where he was pimping his book real hard? Well, he was doing that to Savannah Guthrie. He was pimping his book real hard this morning to the pair that Charlie Pierce refers to as Squint and the Meat Puppet, namely Joe and Mika. And nobody at that table seemed to be able to figure out a way to ask any hard questions of Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz. No, he was there to explain, I've spent my life defending religious liberty. I clerked for Judge William Rehnquist. Yeah, okay. That establishes your bona fides. Piyush Jindal comes with very good basmati rice, according to Steve. He says, sorry, couldn't resist. But no, he was out there pimping his stupid book again and making outrageous arguments about how, well, of course it's all right for a Negro to marry a white person. That doesn't have a biblical basis, banning that. But there's a biblical basis for banning the homos from getting married. How many months is it till November 2016? Yeah, I may have to get a brand new U-shaped blowgun just for the self-administration. Well, probably going to have to lay in a supply of the Thorazine darts while I'm at it. Aha, much better now. Yeah, so we got that going for us, which is stupid. But this, sweet Jesus, this. Out of the Washington Post, by Peter Holly, published at 7:31 this morning. Talk about taking a steamer on your day. For many Americans, the Confederate... I'm sorry, this is the flag thing, I know. And, of course, it's come to fisticuffs and a pasty-faced, doughy, ginger-headed, kind of buggy-eyed freak in South Carolina got himself arrested for screeching and attacking some people who want that stupid rag to come down in Columbia. But this. Oh, God, this. This is a special hockey puck advisory for all of our members of the Horn Family Commune Congregation of Color. Okay? For many Americans, Mr. Holly writes, the Confederate battle flag is an unmistakable symbol of slavery and oppression. But for Karen Cooper, a black woman who was born in New York but later settled in Virginia, the flag embodies something else entirely. I actually think it represents freedom, the ardent Tea Party supporter says in a video interview that's been making the rounds online. It represents a people who stood up to tyranny. Oh, my head. We got to do this, don't we? Yeah, we do. It's, the video is accompanied by a photograph of this woman of color wearing, I kid you not, a Confederate battle flag T-shirt festooned with images, imaginary renderings of black guys wearing the gray of the Confederacy. No, really. And holding a Confederate battle flag on a metal pole over her shoulder while she looks skyward. We don't know if there's something up there she's looking at, or if she's just waiting for Confederate Jesus to come down, or what. But oh, screw it! Everybody get a hockey puck, okay?
A little bit about Karen Cooper. I don't like to be told what to do. I'm a proud Virginia flagger, and we are at Hollywood Cemetery in Richmond, Virginia. I grew up in New York. I was a member of the Nation of Islam in New York. You know, the Nation of Islam thinks, you know, races should be separate, you know, black and white and stuff like that. And then I came down here, and we were more together.
Oh, by the way, she also wears a Confederate battle flag ring and a Confederate battle flag bracelet.
And I just realized, I was like, well, that can't be right because there's a lot of nice white folks. I mean, people wave to me that I've never known.
That whole waving at other people thing is apparently unknown up on the mean streets of New York City. Well, that's yeah, we are more genial in the South. Hey, y'all, you want some iced tea? Bless her heart, God love her. She can't help it. Yeah. We'll smile in your face while we're putting the shiv between your ribs. That's how it is down here. But we're going to smile and we're going to wave while we're doing it. Yes, we are. So let's see here. Just a quick review on what we have thus far on Karen Cooper. She is a former member of the Nation of Islam who converted to the Confederacy. Actually, what she converted to was teabaggerism. She's a teabagger. Yep. Who knew there was a subsection in there in amongst the birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, booger eaters, birchers, libertarians, Republicans. It's a big tent that's got room enough in it for Karen Cooper, a black woman who thinks that the Confederate battle flag was a... Oh, never mind.
The North, they claim that they like black people and they care about black people, but it is so segregated, it's not funny.
Well, that's true. We are more segregated today than we have ever been before. I wonder how that happened. Gosh, I wonder if it has anything to do with all the white folks after Brown versus Board of Education going out and founding their own Christian, God-fearing, upstanding academies. Where, you know, there weren't any of those people going to school because, you know, that blackness can rub off on your kids. And next thing you know, they're, Well, they're talking like them. Wait a minute, we're talking like them. Oh dear, see, and we didn't even know it was happening. Oddly enough, I know people who like have been to New York. I've been to New York. I know people who've lived for like years and years in New York. I know people who are born and raised and still there in New York. And oddly enough, to a person, they can tell you that yes, as New Yorkers, they have smiled at other people. They have even smiled at people who were strangers. They have even smiled at other people who were strangers who were not of their same skin tone. Sometimes every single day. And without flags. Steve, who happens to be in New York, in New York City at this moment, races should be separate, is the subject line. This can't be serious. Now I get what George Wallace said. Integration yesterday, integration now, and integration forever. Not quite, Steve, not quite. Oh, it continues. It continues.
I felt more welcomed in the South.
Well, as long as you know your place, absolutely.
I believe in a very limited, very small government.
Oh, goody. She believes in limited, small government. An image of her with her Confederate flag over her shoulder as though she's marching off to Chancellorsville, standing in the cemetery in Richmond, looking at a great big bunch of rocks piled into a really narrow, spiky pyramid.
You okay?
And apparently she's become, you know, kind of the same way Victoria Jackson did with her ukulele. She's become a teabagger celebrity.
I joined the Tea Party because I actually want to tell people that the federal government shouldn't be doing all this stuff that they're doing.
Yeah, all this stuff that they're doing. Maintaining roads and building bridges. Or, well, okay, we don't build so many bridges and we don't maintain so many roads anymore, but... You know, having a national military with a presence all over the gall-danged world. Oh, wait, the teabaggers support the military. Oh, by the way, that big, really narrow, stupid pile of rocks pyramid, it's got a stone on it that's got carving on it that says, "To the Confederate dead." You know, to the traitors.
You know, you are not to control every aspect of our lives.
And yet, oddly enough, the federal government doesn't control every aspect of our life. It only does that inside the thin gray settlings that pass for brains that slosh around between the ears of teabaggers.
And so, on Facebook, I started meeting, you know, my friends who was in the Tea Party. They were mostly, you know, they had Confederate ancestors. Then I met this lady, Susan Hathaway, and she started flagging. And I said, well, I should go out there and flag with her.
A white lady who stands around Virginia waving the Confederate battle flag. She was the, well, we've talked about her in the past. This is the woman who was behind putting up that really great, big, monumentally huge Confederate battle flag along I-95 in Virginia that stands as a perpetual embarrassment to the people of the Old Dominion. And it being on private property about which intelligent people who live in Virginia can do absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm.
One, I support, you know, Confederate history, and two, it's a great way to show my freedom of speech. It's my right to be able to be out there in public with the battle flag. You know?
I got to be careful with this story, because I don't want to be overtly disrespectful, and I don't want to manifest anything that could even remotely be referred to as racism. But damn, this woman is dumb. Do let's continue.
Oh, so that's why I did it. I know what people think about when they see the battle flag. You know, all they think is KKK and we hate black people, you know, or we want to bring slavery back. So I knew it was going to be something for people to see a black woman with the battle flag. Actually, most people don't even stop to talk to me because I think they in such shock.
I think they probably look and go, goodness me, look over there, a mentally ill person. But I want to reiterate that I fully support this woman's right to display, carry around the Confederate battle flag. In fact, as the country now stands, I want her to. I like my idiots to wear labels saying, idiot! And that's what you're telling the world if you're displaying that flag. Hello, world, I'm an idiot. Hello, world, I know absolutely daggum nothing about history. Hello.
See me out there with the battle flag. I don't even think they don't have the nerve to even ask why I'm out there.
You really don't have to now, do you? I mean, what, so she can tell you about limited government and the need for the gold standard? Marty pointing out, this one needs to spend a few minutes with Spike Lee. He'll straighten her out in about 5 minutes. I doubt if he could. No, if you're an intelligent person there in Virginia or whatever, and you see this woman walking around with her Confederate battle flag, and she's a woman of color, in typical Southern fashion, you say, well, bless her heart. God love her. Right.
You know, I'm not advocating slavery or think that, you know, it was right.
She sounds like she's not entirely sure about that. And, of course, there's the fact that that flag was fought for by people who did advocate slavery and thought it was right.
Was it? And none of my friends think it was. It was just something that happened. It just didn't happen in the South. It happened worldwide.
No, Karen, it didn't happen. American chattel slavery did not happen worldwide. It was quite a significant period of time earlier when Great Britain outlawed slavery. Now, granted, the Russians still had serfs, and they were little more than slaves, but they were not technically slaves. Slavery existed in the ancient world. In fact, you can find, if you really want to do that to your mind and your eyes, you can go and read in the Old Testament God's rules for how one deals with slaves. For instance, there are different punishments for raping a slave woman and raping a free woman. If you rape a slave woman, all you got to do is pay off the slave woman's owner. Different story if you rape the free woman. Mm-hmm. And you know what? If the teabaggers, thank you. Thank you, Gerald. Gerald pointing out another good label for these idiots is the that urine-colored snake flag. These dolts are sure making it easier to spot their dumbasses. And good. Absolutely. It's kind of like the Friends of Coal bumper stickers and Friends of Coal license plates and Friends of Coal t-shirts and Friends of Coal yard signs here in West Virginia. You see one of those? In fact, we were out today, the boss and I, Agnes and I, and we were passed by this really, really lovely Audi crossover vehicle. And there it was on the back. They had a Friends of Cole license plate, and I just looked at her and said, "Look, honey, idiots." So I'm going. It's almost typical, isn't it? Or almost to be expected that a gang that adopted the urine-colored snake flag would then move on to the Confederate battle flag, isn't it?
I said this before, and people can think it's horrible.
Then why say it twice? Because teabagger.
But I believe slavery is a choice. And I say that because of what Patrick Henry said.
I don't know if I have the emotional fortitude to go any further. Slavery is a choice. Oh, by the way, sorry, Jeremy in Vermont. Jeremy was laughing uncontrollably for a while. Confederate Jesus, you can't just sneak that kind of line in, Bob. I spit out my Mountain Dew. Coming down from on high, and old General Lee hitting the horn. I mean, when you see one of these snake flaggers or Confederate battle flaggers, it kind of calls to mind, look for the stupid label when you are viewing a moron or bagger. You know that somewhere their mouths are breathing, their knuckles walking. You get the idea. Okay, I promise, no more singing for the rest of the night. It'll probably destroy fundraising. Oh, speaking of which, remember, we now have a matching challenge on the table, thanks to Darlene meeting in one fell swoop. Well, it wasn't fell now, was it? It was a good swoop. In one lump, Darlene took care of Chris's challenge for the evening. So there's $140 in matching challenges on the table. Dollar for dollar matches. You double your money this evening in this, what we are calling, a challenging week at the Horn. Thank you very kindly, both to Chris and to Thomas, our buddy Jug of Punch. Okay, let me get the bite stick and start over. So where were we? We were at slavery is a choice because Patrick Henry said,
"Give me liberty or give me death."
Oh, slavery was a choice because Patrick Henry said, "Give me liberty or give me death." See, I don't get a hockey puck, damn it. Well, that just proves it, doesn't it?
Make it stop. The stupid, it hurts us. It burns us.
Ah, thank you. I knew Jim would know the answer to that question. Tsar Alexander II freed the serfs before and enacted reforms before Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. Thank you, Jim. All right, I want to get this in its entirety. Patrick Henry and everything else. Right, Gerald. Gerald, just trying to get clear here. So you're telling me that all the slaves had to do was quote Patrick Henry and they would have been freed? Or was it dead? I dozed off there for a second. I think it was dead. All they had to do was quote Patrick Henry and they would have been dead. You know, deader than Denmark Vesey, lynched in Charleston, South Carolina, the founder of the Emmanuel, Mother Emmanuel AME Church. Yeah, that kind of dead.
I've said this before and people are going to think it's horrible, but I believe slavery is a choice. And I say that because of what Patrick Henry said, give me liberty or give me death. To me, you know, if we ever went back to that kind of slavery, no, I couldn't do it. Give me death.
What do you say? Need a little help here. I just had to check in on the chat room because I knew they'd be a little bit of help. A graphic having just been posted there. Look, son, an idiot. I'm rendered speechless. I'd choose death. Well, you didn't. It didn't quite work that way, Karen. Being real careful here. Real careful. Because I don't even want to create. I don't want to make it possible for anybody to argue that. No. No. You know what? I'm just glad Tracy's not listening this evening. Because, well, if Tracy was actually listening, I'd be worried about. I'd be worried about her safety and that of her passengers. Having to pull over on the 5 somewhere in L.A. to get... Now, what did that... No. I'm glad Tracy's not listening. Jim... Jim is flabbergasted. I'm glad I'm not the only one. Give me Librium or give me meth. Do what, Karen? Marty has backtracked on his previous opinion. You're right. Spike Lee would find this one a lost cause. Well, so we don't have that much more to go. Help me. I'm hypnotized. This is apparently doing no good for anybody out there. I got a feeling Michael and Madison's kicking furniture. Subject line, pro-choice slavery. So are the neo-Confederates going to rebrand as pro-choice now? Slavery, trademark. When the other choice is death, it's still technically your choice. Fuck, I quit. I'm sorry, Michael. All we got in common is our misery, and the least we can do is share it. Let's see if we can work through this the last minute and 35 seconds or so. No guarantees. I may be out the door screaming into the yard.
I feel I'm a slave now because the federal government does control me. I can't smoke what I want to smoke. I can't drink what I want to drink. If I want to put something into my body.
Karen Cooper, like so many teabaggers around her, already thinks she's a slave of the government. I may just take a bite out of the cowbell now. Karen, nobody's got you working in the big house and threatening to sell you south. I can't smoke what I want to smoke. All right. I'm changing my policy position tonight. Pot hurts. If this is your brain on dope, my position on cannabis has changed entirely. I mean, even those of you who get medical relief from it, you don't want medical relief from cannabis if it's going to do that to your brain, do you? Now, that's just mean, Gerald. Gerald says, I didn't think it was possible, but I think she just gave me an ear bleed. I sure would hope that her favorite drink would be liquid Drano. Oh, she can't smoke what she wants to smoke. Maybe she meant tobacco because, well, she would be in good company, and the teabaggers do bring that sort of thing up. Remember, we had a senatorial candidate here in West Virginia, a really, really rich man whose entire existence proves that one does not have to be intelligent to get rich, named John Racy, who declared that the Monongalia County Health Department passing a non-smoking ordinance for places of business and him not being able to smoke in his office was the very same thing as being loaded into a cattle car and shipped off to Auschwitz. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's your teabaggery. Okay, I don't feel so bad about the cannabis anymore. Because she doesn't seem stoned, does she? Reminds me of that old T-shirt. Are you stoned or stupid? This is obviously stupid. Hold on now, we're almost done. We can get through this.
Me death. I feel I'm a slave now because the federal government does control me. I can't smoke what I want to smoke. I can't drink what I want to drink.
Can you be sold and shipped off to another state? Can you be beaten within an inch of your life for leaving the property boundaries? No? You're not a slave! Anybody making you chop cotton? Hmm? Old Marsh come down to your apartment every night and want to have his way with you and you can't say no? Huh? No, you're not a slave. You're a teabagger. You're a freaking idiot.
I want to put something into my body. It's my body, not theirs. So what gives them the right to tell me what I should do? That's tyranny. But yet and still...
Tyranny? Tyranny? Woo!
It's only the Southerners, and it's only the battle flag that has all the weight and the guilt on it, and it's not right. It's not right. I actually think that it represents freedom. It represents a people who stood up to tyranny. And by me being out there, I hope that you would see this is not racist. I mean, how can it be racist if I'm out there with them?
Because it can be racist, and you're out there with them, because... Karen, God love you, bless your heart, you're a dumbass. Pictures of her standing there with a whole bunch of pasty-faced white people looking like a little fleck of pepper on a pile of salt. Huh.
Talking with them, I'm hugging them, you know. I'm conversing them. These are my best friends that I'm out here with.
I'm glad.
I hope to change or to accomplish is just to, I don't know, wake a few people's minds up and stop believing that that flag is about race. I want them to stop thinking that, you know, but, you know, that's up to them. In the end, I'm just doing it for me. It makes me feel good.
Does she realize that all of her flagger friends go home and laugh at her at night? That's the sad part. I told you. I told you we had an absolutely gone pro lineup. For this here Titanic Tuesday. Gerald says, I have a better question. Does she realize that words are coming out of her mouth? Well, wouldn't you love to see her sit down to lunch with Sarah Palin? The bowl is not big enough to encompass the word salad that would be produced. All right, so it is 21 minutes past the hour, and wow. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Bob, very kindly. All but $40 of Jug of Punches, our Cup Runneth Over Challenge, has just been met. There's only $40 to go, and I can shut up about fundraising for the rest of the evening. Okay? Thank you, Bob. Thank you very, very kindly. On that note, we will go to break. Yeah, I play this song from time to time. Seems to fit here. And by the way, it being Titanic Tuesday, the 30th of June, we have the Green News Report coming up. Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. We'll take a little break, and I'll try to find my lost serenity, ingather my equipoise, and otherwise try to overcome this urge to just hoot like a freaking barn owl. This is listener-supported conversation radio. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This isn't Alabama. Oh, how will I know? I'm in central Germany, where I love to go. Then how come I am seeing right in front of me? My Lord, there flies a rebel flag in central flies a rebel flag in central Germany. Mercy. I was riding peaceful on this train, enjoying the scenery and mellowing my brain. Then stuck upon the free barn, there for all. Present rebel flag in central Germany. A massive Confederate flag in central Germany. Oh boy, let's way out of this. Think
It's Tuesday, June 30, 2015.
Well, this is a rule that actually regulates toxic pollution emissions from primarily coal facilities.
Supreme Court strikes down first ever mercury pollution rules.
Sit down and shut up.
Chris Christie jumps into the 2016 race. We'll tell you his position on climate change. Coal plant forced to clean up toxic air pollution in the Navajo Nation. Plus,
if we have to ditch or to bail out, we will be a couple of thousands of miles from any island or coast where somebody can rescue us.
Solar-powered plane finally takes off on dangerous Pacific Ocean crossing.
All of those dangerous missions and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And Jesus Christ returns to Earth, declares man-made climate change real. GOP responds, he's no scientist.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, so Chris Christie's really going to do it, huh?
Yeah, you bet. But we'll get to that in a moment. First, our top story. The Supreme Court has struck down the nation's first ever regulations to limit toxic mercury pollution from coal power plants on Monday. In the 5-4 decision, the conservative majority did not undermine the authority of the Environmental Protection Agency in reducing toxic mercury pollution, but said the EPA failed to consider the costs to industry at the correct stage of the rulemaking process.
Never mind the costs in lives, the 11,000 premature deaths each year, the $90 billion in health care costs that we accrue because of the pollution from these plants. The EPA did it out of order. They figured out the costs second instead of first, so let's get rid of the whole rule.
But it's not all bad. Columbia University environmental law professor Michael Gerard told us on the broadcast that most coal plants are already complying.
Most of them have already done that, or are already locked into buying the equipment that will do that.
Mm-hmm.
The rule remains in effect until it goes back to the D.C. Circuit, which will decide whether to put it on hold then or merely leave it in effect until the EPA goes forward with a revision.
So most of these plants have either shut down or they're already meeting the requirements of this rule. I was really happy to hear that.
And it's important to note that the EPA did do that cost-benefit analysis, as you said, and they found the public health benefits would outweigh the costs 9 times over.
But they did it out of order, so you got to start over from the beginning.
But some good news. One of the most polluting coal-fired power plants in the nation will pay $168 million to clean up its operations in a settlement with the EPA. After years of litigation, the owners of the Four Corners Power Plant in the Navajo Nation have agreed to install new pollution controls, pay fines, and fund public health and air quality improvements in the region, where tribal members suffer some of the nation's highest rates of severe asthma. Meanwhile, in politics, on Tuesday, New Jersey's Republican Governor Chris Christie became the 14th candidate to jump into the crowded race for the 2016 Republican presidential nomination. We've been tracking the climate change positions of all of the official candidates, and Governor Christie takes the more evolved approach, accepting that climate change is real, but questioning how much of it is man-made and whether countries like China will ever cut their emissions.
Well, that's what he says in public, but in private, as we found out at BradBlog.com some years ago, Chris Christie has a completely different story to tell when he thinks the public isn't listening.
In secret audio obtained by the Brad Blog from a secret Koch Brothers billionaires retreat, David Koch in 2011 revealed he privately met with Governor Christie, who shortly thereafter pulled New Jersey out of the Northeast's successful regional cap-and-trade emissions program.
The audio's a little hard to understand, but I think you can get this. Here's David Koch introducing Chris Christie at this secret retreat in Colorado.
Another example of Governor Christie's commitment to the free enterprise system is that only a few weeks ago he announced that New Jersey would be withdrawing from the Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which would have raised energy costs, reduced economic growth, and led to very little, if any, benefit for the environment.
That led David Koch to go on to call Chris Christie My Kind of Guy. You can hear the entire audio of both Coke and Christie at bradblog.com.
Finally, it's the moment of truth for the Solar Impulse 2, the 100% solar-powered plane making an historic trip around the world. The super ultralight plane took off from Japan on Monday after weeks of weather delays and has passed the point of no return on a grueling five-day nonstop flight across the Pacific to Hawaii. The solar panels must charge the batteries enough to keep the plane aloft at night. The plane's co-owner, Bertrand Picard, says their goal is to show a better world is possible.
For much more on all of the stories we covered today and those we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can and should follow the Green News Report on the Twitters and the Facebooks at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Come fly with me. Let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come on.
Yeah, after Karen Cooper, I could use some booze, exotic or non-exotic. It matters little as long as there's a swirly straw. Brother Asa pointed something out a little bit ago before the break or during the break, around the break. Brother Asa noted, let's not just dismiss Karen Cooper as a dumbass, Bob. Maybe the money check cashed in time. Check cleared. And thinking on scary similarity of terms, Gerald pointed out, I smell a new reality show for Fox. Mm-hmm. Yeah. By the way, let's see, we're going to go to the 8178 line, and the Skype line just a moment. If you want to reach the program, the stress line is back to normal. It is 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN. If you want to get in the queue for, further conversation. Note coming in from, our buddy Luta. Luta says, when I was a young teenager, I had a group of friends for a year or so. At least I thought we were friends, but I always felt like when I wasn't around, they were saying bad things about me and my people. But in the end, I think I was just their token Indian. This woman made me think of that. She might not realize that she's just their token black friend, so they can say, well, we're not racist. My best friend is black. Yep. And, Steve in New York noting, as I also said about Piyush, not all crackers are saltines. And hey, looky there. It's Carol Baker. Hey, Carol.
Hey, how the hell are you?
I banging my head off the desk a little bit, but hopefully the headache won't be too debilitating.
You know, I was laughing last night when you were saying I'm an idiot because I believed I hadn't talked to you in a couple of weeks because
no.
I've just been so depressed with the news and, you know, and then the shootings in Charleston. And then I felt a little better after the president delivered the eulogy at Clem Pinckney's funeral because I thought it was really very good and it was very tasteful. And I know a lot of people didn't like the fact that he invoked the name of God, but, you know, when you're delivering the eulogy at the funeral of a minister, it's bound to happen.
The last pretty clearly non-believer president we had was Abraham Lincoln.
Well, here's the thing, is that you and I have both spoken in front of large audiences before in our lives, and the one thing that we've learned is that when you're speaking to an audience, you have to speak to them where they are, not where you are or where you want them to be, but where they are. And that's how you get your message.
Well, right. I mean, if you get in a cab in downtown Mexico City and your cab driver doesn't speak English, you don't just yell at him louder in English.
Exactly. And then, of course, you know, we had the two great decisions out of the Supreme Court, and you know, and I was just delighting in Uncle Nino's temper tantrums. And then all this stuff kind of came down, all the little secret gigs that, you know, they kind of shivved us with yesterday. And but the thing about the thing that I really have been the most pleased about has been the marriage equality thing. And I'm pleased because I have so many LGBTQ friends who it has made such a difference to. For no other reason, and here's what I think a lot of the fundamentalist Christians don't understand, that for the very first time, I think this ruling actually gave more legitimacy to heterosexual marriage than ever before, because for the very first time, it's about love and not privilege. And isn't that what marriage is supposed to be about?
That's exactly what it's supposed to be about, although if you check in with the right wing, it's supposed to be about procreation now. I'm going to have a baby.
Whatever. Yeah. That I didn't get the memo. But, you know, we spent plenty of time scolding the Morans and the Titanic intellects, but today I got to tell you, it was another one of those days where I just wanted to grab a hold of some progressives and just smack the shit out of them.
Oh, no. What did we do?
Well, there was a story that came out of Arkansas this morning. A county clerk resigned over marriage equality, and her name is Dana Guffey. She's out of Cleburne County, which is north of Little Rock. And I'll tell you the funny part about Cleburne County here in a minute. But,
okay.
She met with a local judge and informed him that she was going to resign because she had moral objections to granting licenses for same-sex marriage. Now, I looked at that and I said, that's the way this is supposed to work. That's absolutely the way this is supposed to work. She didn't stand in her office and
stamp her feet
and embarrass people and hold the county clerk's office hostage. She took a moral stand and said, if this is what I have to do in order to do my job, then this isn't the job for me. And she left. And I thought, if you really look at it, that is a principled stand that I can respect. I can respect what she did without respecting why she did it. Because what she did was she opened her office up to allow somebody else to come in who was willing to do the job, all of the job. Now, just cherry pick the job. But
yeah, the oath-sworn, constitutionally empowered job.
Exactly. So what happened was I posted this story, and people were like, you're an idiot, or she's an idiot, and good, now gay Arkansas, people won't have to pay her salary because she won't. Yeah, she knows that. She knows that, that she gave up a job that she's had for a very long time. And I, contrary to popular belief, I don't begrudge people their religious convictions, because we've been telling them all these years that they shouldn't let what they believe color their prejudices, and we should do the same thing. Now, since she's a true believer, whatever you may think about that, she's doing exactly the right thing. She's not holding the job, trying to force people to pay her salary by refusing to do her job. She's walking away without compromising what she believes. And I got a lot of good riddance to the fat ass and the stupid bitch, and I'm like, guys, this is exactly what we wanted. We wanted those clerks who weren't going to do their job to very quietly walk away. And she wasn't making a big deal out of it. The Associated Press came to her, and she said, look, I don't hate anybody. And I have to take her at her word at that. I didn't make a public statement. I didn't want this to be a big deal. It's just, it's how I feel. I truly believe it, and I'm walking away.
And to be fair, because the things work the way they work, I would hazard a guess, Carol, that she will probably make twice as much as she made as the county clerk being lionized and martyrized by the right wing.
Absolutely.
Whether she wants to participate in that or not.
And we're helping to do it.
To a certain extent, yeah. Think about this in terms of school desegregation.
Mm-hmm.
Would you rather have, let's have Sherman set the Wayback Machine for Brown versus Board of Education?
Right.
In the wake of that decision, would you rather have a teacher say, "Well, I suppose I can also teach the little negros"?
Yeah.
Or would you rather that teacher, who is obviously still prejudiced and a bigot, say, mm-hmm. I'm going to quit teaching in the public schools, and I'm going to go teach over here at this nice little white Christian academy that they built.
That's right. That's exactly where I want her. I want her out of the public schools.
Yeah. Going back to the previous issue, if she wants to whistle Dixie and carry the Confederate battle flag as she goes, good, because then we will know her.
Exactly. We like our bigots labeled.
So I don't know.
There's
so much heat this issue generates so much heat and very little light. Let's put it that way.
Right. Well, think about all of the county clerks or parish clerks that are holding their offices hostage and saying, "I refuse to leave and I'm not going to do what the Supreme Court told me," and it's just going to cost the taxpayers a shitload of money in court fees and lawyer fees to make them do the inevitable, which they are going to have to do, just as they had to issue licenses for interracial marriages that they absolutely hated. They're going to have to do it, or they're going to have to leave, but they can't. It's unsustainable as it is. So I applaud her for walking away. I thought that this was exactly what progressives wanted. But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
No. You're not wrong, Carol. If she just walked away and she doesn't run out and file some sort of cockamamie lawsuit, let's be fair. She said that she didn't want to make a big deal out of it. Let's take her at her word.
Right.
I do not, all those 501c3 law mills. Exist for her and people like her. I might have something a little bit harsher to say if it turns out she's the plaintiff in whatever her name is versus Cleburne County, Arkansas.
Well, there was another one in Mississippi that made a big deal about her exit. Now she wasn't as quiet and gracious, and she made quite the deal out of it. I can't grant her as much grace as I can this woman, because there was nothing in her statement. I mean, she didn't make a big deal out of it. She didn't go all the Lord God Jesus. She didn't do any of that shit like the woman in Mississippi did when she quit, so I'm gonna give her all the benefit of the doubt. But I wanted to share the part with you where the goddess of irony takes a dip in the pool here.
Oh yes, do.
Well, Cleburne County is about 65 miles north of Little Rock, and it's named for a Confederate general, Patrick Cleburne, who may have been gay, according to historians. Yes. And there's a book called Conduct Unbecoming, Gays and Lesbians in the U.S. Military. An author by the name of Randy Schultz wrote of Cleburne's intimate relationship with an aide, Captain Irving Ashby Buck.
Irving Ashby. Sorry.
And said that the Confederacy appeared to have celebrated a gay general in Cleburne. Schultz cited as evidence a Cleburne biographer's statement that Buck shared Cleburne's labors during the day and his blankets at night, and that the two men had a very strong attraction.
Well, isn't that James Buchanan and Rufus Devane King all over again?
Yeah.
The folks in Seattle got around to saying, "Oh, by the way, we're also naming our county ex post facto after Martin Luther King." But King County, Washington, was named after Rufus D. Vane King,
mm-hmm.
who was known to his Senate colleagues as Nancy for his intimate relationship with James Buchanan, our only bachelor president.
Was he a Nancy boy?
apparently his colleagues thought he was. By way of counterpoint to quietly and graciously exiting one's office, Carol, mm-hmm. I got a fun one for you.
Okay.
Naturally, we have to go to Talibama for this.
Of course.
Where Roy Moore, Chief Justice Roy Moore.
Okay, hold up. I got to put on my hazmat suit.
Yeah, I'd get the hockey puck, too, if I were you.
No, I can't afford the dental work.
Oh, I know. It's hell. So the administrator of the entire court system of Alabama is, by definition, an employee of Chief Justice Roy Moore.
Uh-huh.
And that administrator, Wynn Johnson. He's okay. The director of legal staff at the administrative office of the court. Has written a letter to all the elected officials of Alabama, including Alabama Governor Robert Bentley. This might be a good time to remind folks that this is the same Robert Bentley who wasted no time in getting that hateful rag down off of Alabama's public buildings and said, "There is no flag worth a job in this state," because apparently he got rung up by the Don't Be Evil folks over at Google, who really, really are quite taken with Alabama's stance on cheap labor and want to build a $600 million data center there that is run entirely on renewable energy. See, there's so much to like in this story, and then you go, oh, wait. Now, Robert Bentley, he got right after that. Well, Wynn Johnson has wrote a letter to Robert Bentley and all the elected officials in Alabama. There's several paragraphs to this, Ms. Baker. So yeah. you might want to just put your feet up and get right comfortable. And what I'd do is I'd affix them somehow so she can't go running barking out into the yard, because this is going to make you do that little old thing.
Hold on, I'll take off my pants. That usually slows me down.
Just leave them down around your ankles. That way you fall before you get
there
to the door.
You go.
Maybe Cat Stevens standing in the doorway going, "No, Mama, no!" Time for public officials to take their stand one way or t'other. Jesus Christ is Lord of all. He came to save the world. We really should have saved this for prayer meeting Wednesday, but some of this stuff won't hold anymore.
Exactly. It gets moldy, and besides that, there are so many waiting in the queue.
Well, yeah, there are. I mean, this isn't like a restaurant where you can take the really crummy piece of steak and throw it in the back and put hold for well done.
Oh, because my next story is about a Baptist preacher. So
oh, good.
Go on.
He came to save the world by his death and resurrection. That world includes you, me, the family, the civil government, all the institutions of life. He came to advance his Father's kingdom. That's capital H, his, and Father's capital F, kingdom, but no capital K for kingdom. Not watch man run rampant upon the earth, as if Christ had never come, as if it were the days of Noah! ! I'm not sure why it's there. Public officials, and this is going to come as quite a surprise, I imagine some certain framers of the Constitution might be trying to claw their way out of the dirt quick as I get done here. Public officials are ministers of God assigned the duty of punishing the wicked and protecting the righteous. If the public officials decide to officially approve of the acts of the wicked, they must logically not protect the righteous from the wicked. Aristotle's trying to get up, too. In
mm-hmm.
fact, they must become protectors of the wicked. You cannot serve two masters. You must pick God or Satan? The criminal... can I put you down for Satan?
I'll take Satan.
Okay, good. That's one Satan. Okay, wonderful. The criminal laws against homosexual sodomy are for the protection of the righteous, particularly the young, the weak, the vulnerable, who need the law to teach them right from wrong when in a vulnerable state. I think he's a little fond of this vulnerable business, don't you?
Crucifixion or freedom.
Yeah, I like them vulnerable, preferably face down with a scuba suit on. The U.S. Supreme Court, although it claims to have done so in 2003, cannot take something that God calls a crime and declare it not a crime. We're facing something even worse now. The civil government taking a new step and actually requiring the approval and sanctifying by the state of an evil behavior. Five justices on the U.S. Supreme Court have now opined that the states of this country and all of us must approve of so-called marriages of same-sex couples. Therefore...
They're actually called marriages. They're actual marriages.
Yeah, they're really called that. Yes.
Yeah.
Therefore, the civil government must now become a persecuting power. You cannot avoid it. The civil government must protect what it approves of. It must protect the advocates' employment, their business dealings, their lives in every way. Against whom? Against those who think their lifestyle is evil. That's you and me, Bible-believing Christians, the church, etc. You know, you lose a little bit of your moral force when you can't come up with something besides Bible-believing church and you got to tack on an etc., don't you?
Thank you, Jubilation T. Cornbone.
Amen. Public official, what will you do? Will you stand up for the law of Alabama, for the people, for the weak and the vulnerable, for the law of God? Or will you capitulate? Will you become complicit in the takeover by the wicked? I must follow the law, you say. Law? What law? There's no law anymore. There's just opinion. One day this, one day that. When the law becomes merely the opinion of a handful of people on the courts, there's no longer any law. There is tyranny. There is chaos. But there is no law. So apparently, with there being no law, it's okay if somebody breaks into Wynn Johnson's house and steals the family silver and rapes the dog and, you know, whatever. Because there is no law. Right?
I'm sorry, I blacked out at tyranny because that's when my bullshit detector goes into overdrive.
Well, that is a magic word now, isn't it? The young and the weak. He keeps going back to the young and the weak. He's worrying me, this Wynn Johnson is. The young and the weak, and I can let you know we're about half done here, Carol.
Oh, God.
I know, skip a bit, brother.
Yeah, can we cut to the chase?
The young and the weak.
Nope.
Those that are caused to stumble by courts that approve of what is evil are those whom Jesus referred to when he said it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and he be cast into the sea than that he should offend one of these little ones. Luke 17:2. You don't want to be complicit in allowing such stumbling blocks. Don't use the Nazi war crimes trial defense. My superiors told me to do it. You're not standing for the rule of law when you capitulate to a law that defies God and exposes people to the wicked. You're just a coward making excuses. So America has been taken over by homosexual Nazis.
Wait, who is this shit fart?
This is the guy who administers the entire court system of the state of Alabama.
Oh, dear God.
and answers directly to Roy Moore.
He answers directly to God himself.
Like I said, Roy Moore. Or will your conscience cause you to resign? Why would you leave the people of this state, their children, your children and grandchildren, always with the children? I wouldn't leave this guy in the company of a baby skunk. To the wolves, those who would rend this society apart with their denial of what's good and evil. So now it's homosexual Nazi wolves. Sorry. Your duty is to stand against the ravages of a superior authority that would go beyond its rightful power and force upon the people something evil. That's what the founders of our country did when Parliament exceeded its powers. That's what the Puritans in civil government in the 1600s did when the king exceeded his powers. That's what the Puritans did when they took to burning witches. Oh, wait, sorry, that's not in there. On Judgment Day, you won't stand in front of the media, the advocates of equality, or even the federal courts. You'll stand before the King of Kings, the judge and ruler over the kings of the earth, Jesus Christ. His law is not subject to the vote of man, and he, as the good and loving author of that law, even though there's no evidence that he could even read or write, does not exempt any nation from it. The law's author, speaking of himself as the stone which the builders rejected, said, "Whosoever shall fall upon that stone shall be broken, but on whomsoever it shall fall, it will grind him to powder." Heterosexual powder, I might add. What can you do? You have the authority as an elected official. You also are sworn to uphold the U.S. Constitution and Alabama Constitution. Find a way to do so. Don't acquiesce to the takeover, actually the takedown. Use your authority and every legal angle to oppose the tyrants. If necessary, say no. It is not rebellion for you to say your interpretation of the Constitution is wrong beyond your authority and detrimental to this nation. In fact, it's your duty. You're not opposing the rule of law. You're upholding it by saying that. The taxpayer, Carol, you know he did this on the tax. He wrote that. He typed that probably while picking his teeth with his toenail clippings on the taxpayer's dime.
Damn right he did.
Jesus. And let's make no bones about it. This is going to happen, already is happening, all over the Confederacy.
Exactly.
And can we put away the notion that there is no Confederacy?
Oh, please.
I mean, have we heard of? I mean, even the weirder parts of the West. Have they been assholes about this in Idaho? Have you seen any of those stories yet?
I haven't seen, not even in Utah.
Kansas? I mean, Diane?
Yeah, Kansas decided to show their ass.
Oh, did they? Okay.
Yeah. I had heard something about that. I can't tell you specifically, but I caught that. Yeah.
Jesus.
Seth never misses an opportunity to fuck something up.
Well, no, of course not. What about your native state of Iowa? They've had legal gay marriage equality for years now.
They've been gay for years.
And wait, shouldn't there be a big hole in the ground where Iowa Way was?
You'd think. Well, you know, the baggers decided to go in, and the three panel judges that decided that particular case that made Iowa, you know, gay marriage haven, they went in and got them voted out. They haven't been able to overturn the law. But they got two of the three judges.
Well, I remember that, but I mean, that didn't change anything, did it?
No. No.
And let's see, they've been gay marrying in Massachusetts since 2003, and somehow or another that Commonwealth has yet not managed to float out to sea.
You know, I've been waiting for the fire and brimstone weather reports and, you know, the sun exploding and that kind of shit. But, you know, of course, Todd Starnes from Fox News has decided that the, quote, record-breaking flooding is no coincidence since the president turned our White House into a gay rainbow flag.
Is that why Washington, is that why a neighborhood burned down in Washington State? I thought it was a forest fire.
No, it was the gays.
Gay forest fires.
It was a gay forest fire.
Damn.
Mm-hmm. But I wanted to contrast my original story with, there's the owner of an East Tennessee hardware store decided to slap a no gays allowed sign in his window. This is from WBIR, the NBC affiliate. And it says an East Tennessee store owner is using what some call a controversial sign.
Oh, there's the Fox News style book again.
Exactly. A controversial sign to express his beliefs following the Supreme Court's ruling on same-sex marriage. Several WBIR 10 news viewers brought this story to our attention on Facebook. Jeff Amix, who owns Amix Hardware and Roofing Supplies in Granger County, it's actually in the city of Washburn, Tennessee. I looked it up. Added the no gays allowed sign because gay and lesbian couples are against his religion. Well, first of all, that is total bullshit.
Find me a gay or lesbian couple that's against his religion. I mean, what is he, a Baptist? And they're against Baptists? Presbyterians? What?
Baptist, come on. You know it's a Baptist.
Yeah, it could be a Methodist.
Oh, no. This will get better here.
Do I need a swirly straw?
Oh, yeah. The Thorazine dart, you know, that U-shaped Thorazine dart.
Mm-hmm.
Amix, who is also a Baptist minister, said he realized Monday morning that homosexual people are not afraid to stand for what they believe in. He said it showed him that Christian people should be brave enough to stand for what they believe in.
Hey, man, glory, pass me a snake.
There you go. They gladly stand for what they believe in. Why can't I? They believe their way is right. I believe it's wrong. But yet, here's the key provision. I'm going to take more persecution than them because I'm standing for what I believe in. Okay, first of all, let's not confuse persecution for butthurt.
I just love that word.
Well, it's because it's so apropos. And I want to send Brother Pastor Amix a case of I can't believe it's not butter to soothe his chafed backside.
Yes. Because you're a giver.
Because I am a giver. Because, you know, I am so fucking sick of the persecution train here. No one is telling them they can't worship. No one's coming after them. They're not having to worship in secret. Again, this is yes.
Yeah, but see, Carol, they're stupid.
He forgets how many years gay people had to lie and hide who they were. He forgets how just until very recently, and transsexual people, I mean, I honestly, 10 years ago, couldn't have told you about a transsexual person. And now my best friend's cousin, who the last time I saw him was a 6'6", 30-year Navy veteran, is now named Diane and a librarian in California. Okay, so I'm learning as I go along, but I don't find it offensive. I think it's absolutely wonderful that they're happy with who they are. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but nobody's persecuting them. No, but He's going to take more persecution than he fucked up. Persecution pizza ruined it for everybody.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say a little bit ago. Somebody wants an $800,000 GoFundMe campaign.
Here's the deal. You can bet your sweet ass that there's a Walmart right up the street from him that has sucked the lifeblood out of his business. But he prayed about it and decided that it was the gay's fault. It was the homosexual. And here, when all the fury dies down in a few weeks, and it most certainly will die down, he's going to end up shuttering his business because there are sane people everywhere across this country. Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee.
And he's going to blame the homosexuals.
And he is going to blame the homosexuals. And he will tell the world about how he was persecuted and lost his business because he took a moral stand.
Yeah.
Which makes me want to puke because it's just a cheap... You know, it's a cheap excuse. It's a cheap trick. You know, if he were such a biblical literalist, why doesn't he have a sign up saying, no divorcees allowed?
Right. Or where's, well, I mean, if he's, where's his no Buddhist sign?
Absolutely.
But then again, at least he's done us all the favor, Carol, of letting us know who he is, where he is, how he is. Yeah.
We like our bigots labeled.
Right.
With or without the song.
Somebody send him a flag. You know, send him a snake flag and a Christian flag and a Confederate battle flag and get off. You know, and let him just be a flagget.
That's good.
Yeah, it just happened right on the spur of the moment there.
That's good too.
But oh God, see, I don't want to get all broken recordy, Carol, because this is, I keep saying it, and I know that I'm preaching to the choir in the first place, but this is not difficult. This is not rocket surgery.
Well, and it isn't the first time that this has happened in history. They reacted precisely the same way back in the early 60s when the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act,
yeah,
and all of that. This is a repeat of history. Everybody acts like this is the fucking new thing. And it's not. It's not.
No, it's...
Some of us have actual goddamn memories.
And... Oh, I don't even know that. I don't even know the time frame. How long did that take to die down? Because I was busy being a baby at the time. I was born in 1963. When I started first grade in 1969, I started first grade with a couple of Asian kids, some black kids, little white kids, you know, some Catholics, a couple of Jews. You know, the rest of us were, you know, little God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian fundamentalists. I mean, it was pretty good cross-section there in the elementary school I started with. And to be fair, I can say that I never saw any overt, because I was a questioning kid. I never saw anything overt happening on the school level. We, you know. Sometimes the black kids would be in the front of the line. So, I mean, you know, it was all just mixed up and jumbled. You know, line up for lunch. And the teacher wasn't saying, you know, black children at the back of the lunch line.
Yeah.
You know, y'all get to dumpster dive. No, none of that shit.
Well, I don't know. I can't tell you how long it took to change because I was raised in the all-white enclave of, you know, northeast Iowa, where it is very, very, very white. And... I mean, we were really rural kids. And if you wanted to see black kids in school, you had to go to Cedar Rapids, or you had to go to Des Moines, or you had to go to Waterloo.
Not Dubuque?
I think there probably were a few in Dubuque. But, I mean, it's just, It's fucking cold up there. Nobody wants to live there.
As compared to southern Iowa, you know, down there on the Gulf.
Oh, listen.
give climate change a chance. It will be.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Oceanfront property before they know it. But this is the starkly different reaction between two Christians. You've got one who says, I can't do it, and I'm leaving my job, goodbye. And then you've got one who's sitting there poking at snakes and wondering why he's going to get bit. And then going to blame the snake for biting him after he sat there and tortured it.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that, because then you don't get to bitch, because those of us who have watched you do it are calling you on your bullshit.
No, see, I remember there was it was many seasons ago now, but it was one of those where the hornets had built this great big monumental nest, and it was about, 6 feet off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And Ferg, being a little boy, was going to go whack it. And I just kind of grabbed it. No, boy, no.
That's a good way to die.
And we had a nice little teachable moment there about, you know, that's a hornet's nest, and it's high summer, and it's full of hornets, and they will sting the shit out of you, and you don't want that.
No.
And the message got through to him. And it was a couple of days later when we were outside, and there was the neighbor kids. These would be the same neighbor kids of the family who proudly displays the Confederate battle flag out next to the road. I kid you not.
I hope you were there going, no, stop, don't.
Yeah, right. Well, it wouldn't have made a damn bit of difference if I'd have hollered it, because they went and they just knocked the snot out of that hornet's nest. And I mean the hooting and the hollering. Aye.
Exactly. Aye.
But this, I really do, because, you know, that cup of coffee I had for 3 years, I don't necessarily know what the outcome of this thing is relative to the religious persecution of innocent, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered county clerks.
Well, a lot of this is going to have to play through the unholy alliance of the Koch brothers and the teabaggers and, you know, all of that. Because if we don't get something done about Citizens United and it being legal to bribe elected officials, because that's what it is, it's legalized graft, and, you know, you and I don't have enough money to actually buy a congressman for ourselves, so
even if we could buy one, we couldn't afford to feed it.
Exactly.
We'd have to take it to live on a farm in the country. Wink, wink, wink.
Yeah, exactly. Old Yeller. So, you know, the truth be told, that I don't know how it's going to play out, because we're kind of going into uncharted territory. The Civil Rights Act came at a time when, you know, there was a lot of social upheaval with the Vietnam War and, you know, and civil rights and assassinating people like Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King and the riots and, you know, I mean, I remember watching Chicago burn.
But see, and this is the distinction, and I'm being quite earnest about all of this, Carol.
Okay.
All cornpone accents and silliness aside. In the case of school desegregation, the George Wallaces of the world, and in Arkansas and Mississippi and James Meredith, there was a very clear sort of line in the sand drawn.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so in June of 1963, when John Kennedy federalized the National Guard, and march them right up to George Wallace's hateful face. Well, there were kids. I mean, in Arkansas, there was a child who was escorted by federal agents and surrounded by military into a school. Okay.
Yes.
The same thing at the University of Alabama. The same thing at the University of Mississippi. And maybe I'm displaying my ignorance here. I probably am. But how do you send a National Guardsman into a recalcitrant clerk's office in Texas and say, well, you know, if a gay couple comes along and wants a marriage license, you better by God issue it.
Yeah, it's not the same thing.
It really isn't. The philosophical and the ethical issues are very similar.
And the fact that it is a civil rights issue. But we're talking about the fundamental right of a child to be educated. Whereas I think that we tend to view marriage is a right, but I don't know.
Well, I mean, do you see now what the nature of my question is?
I do understand the nature of your question, and I understand the conundrum. But I also know that we live in a different time where half of America is so fucking gunned up and ready to shoot the other half that it's the whole idea of marching in the streets, as I well know, is a very, very dangerous thing nowadays, because you have people like those stumps that were down there with Clive and Bundy decided that, by golly, you know, they hated the cops and the authorities down in Nevada, but they were coming up to Ferguson to keep the wrong colors in their place and to defend the police. So I call total bullshit on their whole ideology.
So then, if Wynn Johnson's case down in Alabama,
mm-hmm.
This guy is is the administrator for the entire court system of Alabama, which means trial courts, circuit courts, probate courts, traffic courts, municipal courts. So is the answer for the Justice Department to file a petition against him in contempt and hail him into the United States District Court for the Southern District of Alabama?
I'd like to see how long he's willing to sit in jail for his principled stance.
Oh, be careful about that, Carol. Because there's money in them there jail cells. If you're a Christian. He can write a letter from Montgomery Jail. I mean, if this dumb bastard wrote that thing...
Oh, bullshit. It doesn't have... You know, I'm sorry, but Dr. King writing the letter from...
Birmingham Jail.
From the Birmingham Jail.
I'm sorry, Carol.
Sorry, Siri seemed to pick up on something.
Yeah, I noticed.
Dr. King's letter and this guy's faux persecution letter from whatever jail he wants to sit in, it's different when the guy doing it is wearing a hood and a robe, writing to the Clavering, and is... Christian, you know, because I'm sorry, I think of the KKK, and I know how closely tied they are to Christians. And those are the kind of Christians that creep me out. I tell people I got no problem with your Jesus, it's his rabid goddamn followers that creep me out.
Well, exactly. So then, I mean, I'm trying to figure, do you haul the, so the Attorney General in Texas is saying, I will defend the religious freedom of anybody who feels like, yada, 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 yada. Shut the up.
Exactly.
Do you hail him into court? For obstruction of justice?
Should.
For civil contempt? Because what underlies this, there is a potential, and understand that potential comes from, and I'm not trying to engage in hyperbole here, there is a potential here for a constitutional crisis, Carol. Because I have long ascribed to what I call the Tinkerbell theory of the Constitution. You know, the end of Peter Pan when Tinkerbell's dying?
Sure.
And everybody has to believe in Tinkerbell or she'll die?
If you believe, clap your hand.
Exactly, and you manifest your belief by clapping for Tinkerbell, and Tinkerbell comes back to life. Well, the Constitution and our entire system of government is kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
We've gotten to a point in our history 155 years ago where nobody clapped south of the Mason-Dixon line.
That's right.
And we wound up with 300,000 dead Americans and 300,000 dead traitors. But there is, I'm not saying that's going to happen. I don't think that kind of warfare is ever going to come around again. But the modern manifestation is shooting Dr. Tiller while he's at church.
Exactly.
Or shooting nine innocents while they're at church.
But they make martyrs out of the shooters.
Right. But well, look, I mean, the Klan's getting ready to hold a rally in Charleston, and they said that Dylann Roof was on the right track.
Yeah.
Now, our buddy Mark Potok was on MSNBC earlier today, and he says that this is sort of the dying, barbaric last yawp of the Klan. I want to think he's right, but I don't think he's right.
I don't know. Mark's been at this for a long time, a very long time, and I've known him for a long time, and I have a lot of respect for him. So I'm hoping that his expertise trumps my mere childish hopefulness.
Yeah, but by the same token, we have evidence this evening that the teabaggers are taking into their arms the flaggers. Baggers and flaggers. Wow, that's nice. They did that on purpose.
I'm sure
they did. But there is the potential here, Carol, for a constitutional crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Because how, and maybe they're thinking about this in the Department of Justice. How do you respond? Or more particularly, how does one enforce the will of the court? The court is powerless to enforce its will, or nearly powerless.
I thought that was the Justice Department's job. I don't know. This is truly a question for Dr. Bill, who is a far heavier hitter on such matters than am I.
Well, it turns out that he's as flummoxed by this as the rest of us are.
Oh, good. Then I don't feel nearly as stupid.
But this has got to be quashed. Or I don't know. Maybe this is one of those Zen things where if you sit by the river long enough, the body of your enemy floats by.
Maybe we're overthinking this. You know, we get on Larry all the time about overthinking things, and I think that there were people who probably had the same conversation 50 years ago when George Wallace was standing in the doorway of the school, and we were saying, where does this go? How do we enforce this?
Yeah, and let's remember that there were some graves with bodies put in them along the way.
Absolutely, there were. Kennedy.
Kennedy was dead 6 months after sending federal troops into Alabama, and remember when he went to Texas, the white wingers down there were absolutely hopping up and down, screeching, furious, crazy, mad over things like sending federal troops into Alabama.
Absolutely.
But it's not just Kennedy. It's Medgar Evers.
Sure.
It's three kids in an earthen dam in Neshoba County, Mississippi.
Five little girls in a church.
Yeah. And so, yesterday we had the story out of the Pride Parade in Seattle, of all places. Seattle!
Mm-hmm.
Where people got stomped, you know, for being alive on the planet.
And speaking of which, there have been, what, five, six black churches burned?
Yeah, and that's another thing Mark said this morning. He doesn't see an interrelationship. Maybe it's not.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm... Am I reading too much into it? I don't know. I'm not hearing a whole lot on the news. Another black church was burned. Period.
Yeah. But it's frightening. I mean, it really, really is of concern to me that that folks be, like I said, just sort of aware of their circumstances and their surroundings. I mean, my God, Carol.
I remember the day that you issued that caveat to everyone, and I thought to myself, immediately when I said it was a little jarring, and then I thought, oh, God, he's right.
Because America.
Because America.
You know, that's just how we roll.
Well, and, you know, this whole idea that somehow freedom of speech extends to the end of your fist or the end of a gun anytime there's somebody that you don't like, and then you could stand around and jump up and down and scream freedom, spelled F-R-E-E-D-U-M-B.
Yeah. I usually spell it F-E-E-E-E-D-U-M-M-M-M-M. Freedom!
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm as frustrated as the next guy, but I will not keep you. I would love to hear someone else's take on this. I don't know, maybe somebody else has a better answer than I do, because I'm sitting here shrugging. I got nothing.
I just, I hate problems that don't have at least reasonably discernible solutions. And I don't see that here. And I think the Christians know that.
Okay.
Well, let me put a qualifier on that. The God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist Christians know that. And they are trying desperately to precipitate a constitutional crisis, Carol, because this isn't just about gay marriage.
Exactly.
These are also people, I mean, it's a Venn diagram. There's overlap. These are people who are teabaggers.
That's the
who
story.
Are birchers, who are libertarians, who are upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical fundamentalists. And every last one of these groups is willing to kill. And every last one of these groups has a beating heart of treason inside them and want to see this country come undone. Because the other thing that they share in common is, I guess, a genetic predisposition passed down from great old grandpappy for secession.
Yeah. I just would have thought that, I'm stunned at the number of illiterate people out there who have clearly never learned to read or have any sort of comprehension when it comes, I don't understand people who willfully, ignorantly take what is so painfully obvious to the sane and bastardize it so that it fits neatly into their political ideology. And it was like the civics lesson we were given to that stump a week ago last Sunday, which was fun, but, you know, ultimately fruitless.
Yeah, well, it pearls before swine.
Exactly.
But they can't. By the way, did Miss Barbie get a giggle out of it?
Yes, she did. She did, since it was on her page.
Good, good. Well, Carol, have yourself a wonderful evening. It's been a lovely conversation, and I do appreciate it.
I shall, and let's see if somebody else has got any better ideas than I have.
All right.
We have a smart family.
Yes, we do. You take care.
You too, Bob.
Bye.
Bye.
And let's check in with Rich up in New Jersey. Hey, Rich. Well, did I miss you? Rich was ringing in just as Carol was ringing off. Oh, Rich. Maybe he gave up before we got there. Let's disconnect and see if anything changes on the redial. Both lines are open, 304-574-8178 and 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. If you want to jump into the conversation. By the way, this is kind of fun. Go figure this one. Rand Paul and that thing on his head are a presidential candidate, of course. And presidential candidates are always supposed to be concerned about the optics. Well, go figure. Rand Paul and that thing on his head, of all the people they could sit down and have a chat with, guess who? Carol mentioned him just a few minutes ago. Craven Bundy. Cloven Bundy. Yeah. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, had a little tete-a-tete with a guy whose supporters aimed rifles at the heads of Federal Bureau of Land Management officials. It was in Mesquite, Nevada, on his Stand with Rand tour. And, of course, all the birchers, baggers, ninthers, deathers, tenthers, boogers, booger eaters, you know, baggers, etc., were there, where they wanted to talk about the tyrannical federal land control of freedom, right? Interviewed by the Associated Press, Rand Paul said, "I think almost all land use issues and animal issues, endangered species issues, ought to be handled at the state level. I think that the government shouldn't interfere with state decisions. So if a state decides to have medical marijuana or something like that, yeah, work the pot in there, Rand. It should be respected as a state decision. How about marriage equality? Oh, state decision. See how it works? God, what a founding member of the Jackacid Society. Oh, Jesus. Let's see if we got Rich back. Are you there, Rich?
Hi, Bob. How are you?
I'm good. I'm glad I got you this time.
Yeah. I don't know if this answer will satisfy you and Carolyn at all, but to quote the police, there is no political solution to a troubled evolution.
Oh, that's what I'm afraid. That's what I'm afraid is actually factual.
Yeah, that's my fear too. That these people are struggling to attain the state of human consciousness, and if they don't get there soon, we're doomed. Now, I don't know if that's going to be feasible in our lifetimes, yours or mine. I don't think I have that many more years on this green planet myself, and I feel like the younger ones coming up are more highly evolved than we are. And the dinosaurs that we're railing against here are dying off, so that may be the hope. I think that is our only hope. Because these people, going all the way back to that woman that you had on in the beginning, the black woman with the black teabagger.
Yeah, Karen Cooper.
Karen Cooper. They just, their ability to think logically is not present. I mean, they're functioning on the level of their amygdala and their reptilian brain. They're at a lower level of consciousness than, I hate to say, I'm not saying this to be racist or hopefully not to be racist or elitist, but I don't think their four brains are evolved to the point where they can grasp the fundamental illogic of their positions. They're strictly on
they're rich. They're not driven by logic.
Right.
You know, if you're being run by your lizard brain, it kind of goes without saying that logic ain't part of the process.
You're exactly right, and that's why.
I mean, they're being run by their brooga brooga brain. You know, brooga brooga brooga. Gay people getting married. Jesus is gonna hate me.
But how do we get through that and bring them up to a level of human consciousness where they access their forebrain? I don't know. I don't see how it's going to be done. I don't see how we could possibly bring them up to that level where they function on the level that human beings should be at on the third millennium common era, where we are, where we're trying to live right now, where we're trying to function. I don't have an answer, Bob, and I don't think there is one out there that we can count on.
What I find unsettling about this, Rich, is that if these fundamentalists, these evangelical fundamentalists, are allowed to simply flout the law, then that state of lawlessness that they keep saying that the marriage equality decision, the Obergefell decision, ushered in, becomes a reality, not because gay people are getting married, but because of the bigot's response to it. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, you see.
Exactly. And that is the conundrum here, is that because they're driven by their lizard brain and not by any sense of logic. I mean, even if they were to look at the Bible that they love, that they tout so much, Romans 13, verses 1 and 2 says that you are supposed to be obedient to civil authority because it comes from God. And so, but they don't, the book they say they.
Yeah, it doesn't say civil authority that you approve of comes from God. It says the civil authority comes from God. And you know what's particularly interesting about that passage from Romans, Rich? That is Paul. If Paul indeed was real, and if Paul indeed wrote Romans, that's Paul writing about the pagan Roman government.
Right.
And there's actually a if this is historically factual, there's a reason he did it. And that is because this is before the real persecutions kicked in. Okay.
Right.
The Crestus sect. I think it was Seneca. Was it Seneca who wrote? It was one of the few people to mention the followers of Crestus.
Probably. I'm not up on Seneca. It sounds right.
He mentions them in reference to the Great Fire of Rome during the reign of Nero. But anyway, the Jews in Palestine had been nothing if not a thorn in the side to the civil authorities at Rome. And the civil authorities at Rome were most definitely pagan. And so Paul writes that in an attempt to have the churches set themselves apart from the troublemaking, revolt-inciting Jewish province. And he's saying to the Romans, and he's saying to the church to say to the Romans, you know, we're not them. We're not doing it. We're happy. We want to pay our taxes. We want to live our lives. We're going to, you know, we're going to follow Jesus.
Right.
And so,
render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and unto God what is God's.
Right. And you can argue that maybe, you know, if all of this is actually real, that maybe Paul had that in mind when he wrote that.
I see no reason to think otherwise, Bob. And I mean, it was not the commission of the Christ, from my reading of the Gospels, to rebel against the established authority, because he said quite clearly to Pilate, my kingdom is not of this world. So he was not going to put himself up against the Roman authority. He wanted his followers to believe that there was a different reality for them.
Yeah, after he interviewed him, didn't Pilate say, I find no fault with this man?
Exactly. Right. It was the Zionist Jews that were represented among his followers by Simon Zealot, who wanted rebellion, political rebellion and revolution against the Roman authority. Jesus never wanted that, and Judas was one. Judas was a Zionist. So that figures that the conspiracy was designed within the Sanhedrin
that's the way the hagiography is played out.
Right.
We don't necessarily know how much of that is propaganda versus how much of that is fact, because we don't know we don't even know if Jesus was fact.
Right, of course. But the idea being that the Pharisees, they knew that if they openly rebelled against Rome, they would be crushed, and they certainly didn't want that. Okay? I mean, if there's any factual, historical evidence to any of this, that Yeshua existed, he was not a revolutionary in that sense. He was not a political revolutionary.
No, well,
and this is what these Christo-fascists want to believe today, that he was in rebellion against civil authority, and the second coming is about overthrowing the civil authority represented by the Antichrist and the false prophet.
But the problem is they have to wait for all that to happen. Even their book has Yeshua saying, behold, I come as a thief in the night. You know, no man knows the hour or the day but my Father in heaven.
But they don't even believe that today. They're pushing.
Right. They're trying to drag Confederate Jesus down from the clouds, you know, riding along in the General Lee, playing Dixie on his horn.
Right. Exactly. And this is the delusion that all these mouth breathers suffer from, that is putting this republic in serious jeopardy, and by extension, the whole world.
And that's the problem. I mean, this is ancillary to our discussion, I guess, Rich. But I got to stop. Maybe I need a TiVo so I stop seeing the commercials or something. One of the other commercials that I saw is, danger is upon the face of the land. The Obama administration is giving everything away to the Iranians. Even right. They admit that the Iranians will have nuclear capability in 15 years. And so, I mean, I'm not trying to be facile about it, Rich, but Right. But the alternative to that is everybody walks away and the Iranians have nuclear capability in 4 years. But these people just want, I mean, they want them some Armageddon, whatever they got to do to get it.
Right, exactly. That is the dilemma. That's the ultimate dilemma. That's why, going back to my original point, I don't see how we drag them up to the level of reasonable, logical understanding that is suicidal. And, you know, like, there, you know, what if the rapture comes and nobody is saved? What if it's man-made? They won't even concede there's a possibility it's man-made and not divinely inspired, and that the only result of Armageddon is total waste. The whole planet laid to waste, and there is no salvation for them. They cannot even concede on any level at all that that's a real possibility.
Isn't it going to suck for them, Rich, when climate change kicks our ass before Jesus gets here?
Well, yeah, but they'll just see that as another sign of the coming. And they'll be still sitting around waiting to be raptured up for the meeting in the sky.
Oh, God.
As they take their last breath, they're still going to believe they're going to be raptured out of their self-induced insanity into self-destruction.
And you know, people who listen to this program from other parts of the world, Rich, are often, because I get the emails, they're often surprised by the degree to which religion drives the discussion in this country. And we are in a great big American bubble, too. Because you know what? They're not having this discussion. They're not having this discussion in France. They're not having it in Germany. Now, they'll talk about terrorism, and they'll talk about Muslim fundamentalism or ISIS or what have you. But the religious organizations don't drive the cultural and social discussion.
Right.
Some notion of the public good does.
Well, that's because they're operating from their forebrains in Europe, not from their hindbrain.
But I mean,
our backward population is functioning on.
I mean, it doesn't drive the discussion in Japan either. It doesn't.
Well, again, yeah. Reasonable people that have felt the direct effects of hell on earth through the atomic bombings, which, by the way, we're coming up those anniversaries shortly, as
we
you know.
We certainly are, about a month away.
And, I mean, you know, the fact that we've been largely insulated from the four horsemen in this country, as opposed to how other countries over the last 100 years, after World War II particularly, felt the devastation and destruction of behaving uncivilly towards each other, we haven't really felt that. We're ignorant as a culture. We're really ignorant of that. The degree of self-induced destruction that can be imposed on us by irrationality.
This country is going to be rolling we're going to go from a simmer to a rolling boil in a hurry, and it's going to be this.
Especially if my governor gets elected. I mean,
oh dear God!
About,
oh yeah, yeah. He comes.
Aware, he is a dark horse. He is a very. I mean, I was reading today online that he's already projected as being second in New Hampshire. If he's second in New Hampshire, that could be the beginning of a primary role. Right up to the White House.
Well, but I mean, is he going to be second in New Hampshire because of a proximity effect?
No, it's going to be second in New Hampshire because of the Koch brothers backing him.
Oh, Jesus. But wait. I thought that, no, the Koch brothers are behind Walker.
They're also betting. You don't think they're hedging their bets?
Well, sure. Absolutely.
You know what was said in the Green News Report tonight?
Yeah.
Yeah, he talked out of way. He was questioned today about his stance on global climate change, and he said he doesn't know how much man is responsible for, how much of it, although he can see that it exists. And then the report went on to say that in 2011, he quietly pulled New Jersey out of a tap and trade policies?
Yes.
This man is no friend of the environment.
Oh, hell no. He's no friend of anybody. Well, I mean, I guess,
right.
except the Koch brothers.
Except those who he suckles at the keys to the tit from to get money he needs to become president. Like the rest of them bastards.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up because I'd almost forgotten that he jumped on the clown train today. But he's gonna have fundraising troubles, isn't he?
I don't think so, because he's, like I said, if the Koch brothers have Walker as their darling boy, they're hedging their bets. He's in the back room. He is their number two guy. And if Walker, see, because I think Walker can't connect with people the way Christie does. I really think Christie, for all his bellicosity, he really gets personal with people. Walker, I don't think has that communicative ability that Christie does. Christie, for all his bellicosity, is a brilliant communicator. I don't think Walker's that good. I think Walker's intellect pales in comparison to the evil genius of the intellect of Chris Christie. He is a very intelligent man.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. I mean, he was a federal prosecutor when Christie Todd Whitman was running New Jersey into the ground, right?
Yeah, and what was Walker doing back then?
Oh, he was picking his teeth with his toenail clippings. Well, you know, running low-level grifts and grafts in Milwaukee, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, Rich,
Chris,
I got
to... Chris has been a major player for a long time.
Yeah, he has. And
I know it's time to go, and I just want to tell you, Bob, I'm going to be thinking about you down here legislating for the ACAC, wishing you all the best.
Hey, you wouldn't happen to be in Frank Pallone's district, would you?
I am. No, I'm in the district that used to be Rush Holt's district.
Rush was a signer of the ACAC. Did he get replaced with a Republican?
He's retired. He's retiring this year. I'm not sure who is.
Well, we need Rush. We need Rush. I thought he was already gone, but we need him back on the bill.
No, he's retiring. He's already announced his retirement.
Well, maybe if you get a minute, Rich, and maybe just jingle his office or shoot him an email and tell him, hey, get back on the ACAC.
I will do that, Bob, and I will talk to you when you get back next week after this next.
All right, sounds good,
Washington,
Rich.
And I will let you know the status of my surgery, which I'm thinking I'm going to have next week.
Please do. The whole Horn Family Commune congregation will be thinking of you and keeping you in our very, very best thoughts, Rich.
And me, likewise with you and the Horn family, too, Bob.
All right.
Have a great night.
You too. Take care, Rich.
Bye-bye.
Our buddy Rich in New Jersey. And, yeah, but we don't do the praying thing, but keep him in your absolutely most fond thoughts, please. And we're looking forward to a positive report thereafter. Let's go talk to Jim down in Louisiana, Stan, and round out the program. Hey, Jim.
What's up, Bob? Yeah, I saw a thing on Twitter a week or two ago. It was the percentage of people. In the Civil War, percentage of soldiers. The percentage of people who in the South for each Civil War who owned slaves.
Oh, it was tiny. It was tiny.
Uh-huh. Yeah. 1.6. Sounds a lot like 1%. You know, the 1% that own.
Oh, I know. And I see it all over Facebook. Things like only 1% of Southerners owned slaves, so don't tell me the Civil War was about slavery.
Well, the stupid thing is, all those people, those 300,000, traitors, died for the 1%.
Yeah.
And they'd gladly do it again. You know, it's just amazing. And I think if you brought that point up, most people it would totally be lost for them. Especially down here, you know. Yeah, I guess it shouldn't surprise me. But I just found that kind of incredible. And it also shows how easy the people can manipulate to go against their own self-interest. And that leads into economics and policy and everything. So.
Well, exactly. Exactly. And I know, you just sit and look. I mean, you've got to be looking at your state in just sort of slack-jawed wonder as your governor promises to defend anybody who don't want to issue no homo marriage license.
Well, that's like what was it the other day? I think we were up to on city council or something. Is in the process of getting ready to change all the traders' names. You know, like a main street, a pretty big street in New Orleans is Robert E. Lee. Yeah, then you got this. Yeah, you got all sorts of statues and stuff. Somebody close to me in my family basically said, "Oh, what about the heritage?" And thinking, they mentioned it to me. I'm like, "I'm good, good." And I got, "Well, I thought you'd say that because I'm, you know, I'm the."
You're a commie.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say that, but. It's kind of a 60s term, but I'll wear that.
No, it's coming back.
I'm voting for Bernie, so I'm supporting Bernie. I'm definitely a socialist, and you know, with these people, there's no difference between a socialist and a communist.
Well, I'm sorry we had so little time, but Jim, it is good to hear from you. I hope we'll talk a little bit more maybe later in the week.
All right,
you take care.
Cheers.
Talk to you later. Bye now. Our buddy Jim in Louisiana, Stan. Time to get out of here. Thank you very kindly, Joan. Joan finished off, and then some. Joan finished off the Our Cup Runneth Over Challenge. So we have reached the fundraising goal for this evening, and our challenging week continues apace. We might be able to do this. I don't want to get cocky or anything, but we might be able to do this. Thank you very kindly, Joan, and thank you, Bob, and thank you, Darlene, and thank you, Chris, for the challenge. And thank you, Jug of Punch, for the Our Cup Runneth Over challenge as well. All of this is quite important and very, very inspiring and helpful. I mean, it'll be nice not to be sweating bullets just because I'm away from the microphone for a week in D.C. Thanks to our the USA won its our women's soccer team won their semifinal match. USA, USA, USA. Thanks to our all volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to John Fox, our webmaster and minder of things technical. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.